Yeah, my name's Jules. I'm an alcoholic.
Jules.
And if I'd have known it's going to be this one, I would have dressed a lot less. I don't know what it's going to do, man. And I done got to be one of them risk factors, so I don't want to take no chances, you know what I'm saying? I want to thank the group conscious of this group for inviting me up. It's always a privilege to be anywhere, invited anywhere to share this wonderful gift that's been given to us by our higher power. I was sitting over there chatting with Jim and Bill, and, you know, it's amazing how things happen. This group started probably right around the time me and Tom got started, you know. I looked up the other day, and I had a 33-year anniversary on the 31st of January, and I'll be 66 years old in May. So I spent the whole back half of my life sober. You know what I'm saying? And I want to say something about the guy that took me through the steps. He's the gentleman that Tom mentioned. He's my sponsor. He's my first sponsor. And I was in the Newton County District Attorney's Office, and his daughter called me to give me the sad news. But I remembered when I shared my fifth step, he shared with me that his daughter would have nothing to do with him. And he wasn't that far down the road ahead of me at the time. I think when I got here, my sponsor had about 3 years sober. And his daughter called me. His marriage had broken up. His daughter called me and told me that one of the things I did find out about them is that he eventually danced at her wedding. Okay, he stayed sober. He danced at her wedding. And she called me on his instructions to let me know that he'd passed on. And a couple days later, his wife called me. Of course, the marriage had broken up. You know how this disease do us, right? And she called me and said that he left all these elaborate instructions. You know, a sponsor would do that, right, Bill? And he wanted me to share at his memorial service, right? So she called me. I was driving to meet to go see my brother. I'm from Savannah, Georgia. And I was going home to see my brother and irritate him about his 64th birthday. And we were sitting there going, man, we can't flip these numbers. No kind of way to make it look like we're younger. You know, I'm 66. It don't even make no difference. He's 64. I'll be 46. You know, it's crazy. But I was thinking after I got off the phone with Gerald's wife, where that one little... I told one of my friends, I said that I got stopped. Then I went to a meeting. When I picked up my 30-day chip, some guys gave me a scholarship to a men's retreat out in Rock Eagle. I had less than 2 months sober when I met my sponsor at that retreat. And he remained my sponsor until he got sick. We went through the steps. My life completely changed. Completely changed. I was a bad to drink drunk, but you know, I also had experience with better living through chemistry. And I was bad to do all of that. And I had barely gotten a college degree, and I wasn't doing nothing with it. Nothing. And I got in trouble with the law, and this is the abbreviated part, because the good part is so wonderful. The good part is so wonderful, y'all. I'll sprinkle the bad part in there to give you some perspective. But I Went through those steps with my sponsor, and my life completely changed. I was a bad party. I mean, you know, I come from a family of bootleggers. My grandmama made some of the best peach brandy this side of the Mississippi River. And there were winos strewn all over the neighborhood to prove it. And my granddaddy and his buddies made what they called back in the day scrap iron liquor. And the pronunciation was nowhere near as good as I could put it. Scrap iron liquor. You know, and he was a preacher. And that scrap iron liquor took all the preacher out of it. And I actually did not like alcohol. I seen what it did to folk growing up. I had this problem. I didn't like it, and I thought I was immune to it because I grew up with it. Never saw it as a problem. I joined the Navy, and that's the perfect place for somebody like me. They said sailors drink you under the table. I got certification that can happen. You can drink a lot of folk under the table if you got this disease and don't know it. And I did all of that. But one of the things that happened that I always like to talk about is not so much my drinking, was what I was feeling, what I was thinking that whole time. You know, my mom and my dad split up, and I was coming home from school one day. I was about 7 years old, and my dad was leaving, and I was coming home with some buddies. And you know how you feel when you see your dad or your mom somewhere. I don't know about mom, but dad, because mom always bring the pain. You know, dad is always, you know, giving you a reprieve of some sort. And I was with my buddies, and I was glad to see my dad, and he was leaving. And he put me down, and he kept going. I asked him, where was he going? And he said he would be back. That's all he said. And he walked out of our lives. I didn't see him again until I was about 10 years old. Only for a few minutes, he bought me a bike, a 3-speed English racer that was too damned big. I spent the next 2 or 3 years chasing people to get my darn bicycle back. And I spent a long time waiting on that guy to come back. I got to be 19 years old, and my mom must have seen all of this. She took us to see my dad. She had divorced him, or they had divorced each other. And he did good for 1 or 2 days. You know, I had done made it into college by then, and I really, really wanted my dad to see what I had turned into. And we did all right, but he went missing the third day. And I retraced all of the steps, all of the places he took us bragging about. These are my sons I've been telling you about all these years. See what I'm telling you about. See what great, you know, he was just fixing it with all his friends. And I finally got to the last girlfriend's house that he took us to. And he was in the bathroom, knee walking drunk. That crushed me. I did not know how bad it had crushed me until he died. My mom called me to tell me that my father died. I shed one tear, hit a joint, and went back to sleep. I was 23 years old. I had a lot of resentments like that, and that's one of the ones that went on my 4-step. And that's one of the ones I like to share because I was angry at her the whole time, since 7, and didn't even know I was angry at her, right? But in elementary school, when PTA came, all of them wanted to know why I didn't have 2 parents at PTA. This seems hokey, right? But, you know, y'all know, man, how it is in elementary school. You know, kids can be brutal, you know, and I didn't have a dad. And I blamed it on my mom. Somebody had something to do with it. So I developed a relationship between the two most important people in my life. And I carried it into adulthood. Matter of fact, I didn't even realize until I got clean and sober that I had these two resentments. One of them, I was angry at my mom, and I did a lot of stuff to ladies, not very bad stuff, but I couldn't talk because I couldn't talk to her. You know, I couldn't carry on an intimate conversation with somebody of the opposite sex because I couldn't carry on one with her. And then I'm trying to be somebody. I guess that's how I lucked up and got good grades. You know, because all the kids had two parents were getting good grades. So I figured if I got good grades, I could hang with them, you know. It was strange, but I didn't see none of that till I got sober. I was walking around blind to who I am until I got here, man. You know, I'm pretty good at drawing analogies. I haven't come up with one for that yet. When I do, I'm going to tell y'all what it is. But I was carrying on this facade. Now, I drank. It didn't excite me because I live with the liquor dealers. The chemistry part was like a rebellion. Not towards the liquor, but towards them two that done disappointed me. You know, so I got with the boys coming back from Vietnam with all those wonderful chemicals, and you know, they helped for a little while, but nothing, not even the liquor quell that. I tell you how it really feels. You ever did a freezy? You know, you get the ice get to the back of your head and it just hurts, and you can't scratch it. You can't rub it. That's what was going on with me. I couldn't scratch it or rub it, you know, and the liquor and the dope just dulled it for a little while. I was a church kid, too. My grandmama was a church mother. I told you my granddaddy was, you know, an adjunct preacher. I was, you know, I had a little sense, and I taught Sunday school because I was the one that picked up reading the quickest. So we had all that going on. You know, I went to church and all of that. But church didn't seem to mean anything because these adults were doing stuff that didn't make sense to me. They were loving people now. No one ever abused me. The only abuse I got was my granddaddy's uncle. My granddaddy's brother came up from Key West, and he was an entrepreneur of sorts. We'll leave it at that. And he had this young girl with him, and she introduced me to sex and marijuana. And I guess today they would say that young girl molested me, but that ain't how I see it. Because from that point on, man, I was distracted. You know, maybe I should have Doping Girls Anonymous, because it seemed like, you know, y'all took that hit and everything. That's when everything changed for me. And I can't tell you which one it was. But I will tell you this. Our disease resides in our behavior. Right? And a disease is defined as this. This is going to be very cool. A disease is a disease because the symptoms affect each of the sufferers the same way. And the treatment of the disease affects each of the sufferers the same way. Voila. My behavior changed. And, I managed to get out of high school. And I managed to get sent to Atlanta to a pretty prestigious male black college called Morehouse. And when I got out of town, It seemed like all bets were off. I didn't have to put on appearances for grandma, you know. I didn't have to have the, you know, I had this emotional, you know, confrontational battle with my mama. Then she married my stepdaddy, and me and him came up with a detente. You know, I seen him go at my brother, so I'm like, okay, I'll do what you say, you leave me alone. And that guy was a great guy. He died some years after I got into this program in my arms, and I love my stepfather. He was always the same guy. He never lied to me. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, I got to Atlanta, and I got in that college, and all bets were off. I didn't have to keep up appearances anymore. I didn't have to go to mandatory Sunday school every Sunday just to keep grandmama cool so I could shoot marbles or play ball after church. I didn't have to do any of that. You know, I did, my grades were good because I'm a pretty smart guy. I ain't saying that to brag. The GPA just proves it. When I ain't drinking, you know what I'm saying? And when I ain't partying, I'm pretty decent, you know. But, I bet you we can say that for all of us. You know, whatever God's gift that's been given to us, we're pretty good at it until we sprinkle liquor or dope on it. Then all bets are off. And I'm one of those. So my first semester in school, I kept up with all the folk. But I couldn't tell who had parents in PTA or not, so I didn't know who to keep up with, you know. When we found the party spots and we found the 190 proof grain alcohol and all of those wonderful things, the grades just went down. And I want to tell y'all parents, if the grades are one way this month and another way the next month, you need to look into that because something ain't right. You don't stop being smart overnight. You just don't. Something's up, you know, and you don't get smart overnight. So if they ain't got it, they probably. Them the basket weaving or something, you know. So the grades went down. I was embarrassed. And, you know, we had these double lives, right? I was embarrassed because my grades were down. But it was almost like a little landmine for when mom finds out. It's going to hurt her. You know, we do these crazy things. At least I did. I can't speak for everybody. I played around. The problem is I didn't know when they were coming. So I got surprised by my own bad grades. When she had the paper and she said this was this and I'm not paying for, you know what y'all say when the kids go. I ain't paying for this. You don't have to get a job. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. I joined the United States Navy. That was plan B. And it's like going further and further down the wrong rabbit hole. Because now it's official. You must drink and you must party. They call it liberty. Do what you want to do. So that's what I did. They sent me to this hellhole. It's terrible. It was during the back end of Vietnam. People were going into the jungles to fight. They sent me to this hellhole called Oahu, Hawaii. Terrible. Terrible place, man. And, you know, y'all might be culturally challenged here, but let me tell you, the black exploitation movies were out, and Shaft, and all them people. So I got to Hawaii. I had an afro when I got to Hawaii, but by the time my second leave came, I had a perm, and a derby, and a Coke spoon. Yeah. And platform shoes. Now I'm 6'5 already, right? Platform shoes with bell bottoms. You know, I had bell sleeves, bell bottoms, walking around Hawaii 6'5 with a perm and a derby. I thought I was it. And then they had all kinds of, they had all kinds of liquors from everywhere in the world. I tried to sample every one of them. They had all kinds of marijuanas from every part of the world. I tried to sample every one of those. And by the grace of God, they did not know enough about drugs to catch me with some of my carelessness. By the grace of God. And, I got out of the Navy, and I did not know what was wrong, right? But my first job was to fix this school thing. I did not know what was wrong. I just thought it had something to do with partying. So what I did was, I didn't go home. I flew a plane straight back from Charleston, South Carolina, Charleston Navy Yards, back to Atlanta, Georgia. Off the plane, got right back in school, and did not look up again until I had taken every political science course at Morehouse College. They had to, like, tap me on my shoulder and say, "Hey, man, it's time to leave." But I got a degree out of the deal. Then I got a job with a company car and an expense account and an apartment in Buckhead, and I was off to the races again. I didn't know I was off to the races. But, you know, when they tell you, when they call happy hour drink and drown, and you're a closet alcoholic out of the United States Navy that wants to drink everybody under the table, that is like an open, endless invitation to come destroy yourself a weekend at a time. So this is probably about the early 80s when disco was in. Cocaine got popular, and I had finally found the good, high-quality liquor. You know, I started out with Rock Gut. Okay, now I'm in Remy Martin and all these, you know, these, you can inhale the aroma and, you know, and all of this good stuff. You can drink with your pinky up and, you know, all kind of crazy stuff like that. But, you know, the world is revolving, and, you know, I got myself tangled up with a lot of stuff to cut it short. My behavior spiraled downward. And, you know, my story ain't as grotesque as a lot of stories, but the symptoms are the same. The unmanageability is there. And I don't care whether you were a hobo or a white-collar criminal or whatever. If you sell a stolen van to the police, you are going to jail. That's what I did. Well, I went to jail, but that was a wake-up call. Let me tell you what happened. understatement, right? New Year's Eve, 1985. I had left the house to go buy two bottles of champagne. My wife let me out to go buy two bottles of champagne, thinking that I couldn't screw that up, right? Auld Lang Syne was playing. I was on my way back home. I was 9 miles away from home. Auld Lang Syne is playing, and I'm feeling victorious because I still got one of the bottles of champagne. If I make it back, you know. And I got home, there was this, the closest thing to a Dear John letter that I ever seen on top of the tuck that she bought, rented for me. Cause I couldn't keep up with the money. I went on to the party was held by my uncle, and he was a pretty big to do, Gulf Oil executive, and he had all these highfalutin people that a college guy like me with a degree, you know, would want to meet and all of this good stuff. And, you know, they didn't see me because they were just as drunk as I was, you know. But my wife and her sister and her aunt and her mother and her grandmother saw me. They were like, I don't know if y'all seen what happened this week, but they were like the panel. When I walked in the door with her in the middle, and they all had the same expression on their face, you know, and she had to, you know, I had to look at her. I couldn't look at them. But the funny thing about that was I knew how important that was to her, but I couldn't feel it. I couldn't feel it, man. I knew it was screwed up real bad, But I'm clinging to the fact that here's the damn champagne. It added insult to injury. But I ended up in jail. And I called my father, my stepfather, and I lied to him. I said I was being discriminated against and that I had really, and that I hadn't really done it, right? He said, well, no, he said, he asked me, did I do it? I said, no, sir. He said, fine, you'll be all right. He hung the phone up. I called my grandmama, my beloved grandmother. And, you know, she old school sister from way back, first part of the century. She was like, don't claim it, son. Don't claim it. She started trying to save me on the phone. I hung up. And then I called my wife, the last resort, because I'm trying to get out of jail, man. I called my wife, and she answered the phone, and she hadn't seen me physically in 3 days. Matter of fact, I had the same suit on I left to go to work in 3 days ago. And all I could hear on the other end of the phone was, and I just eased the phone down. And it dawned on me that I had a problem. Not with alcohol and drugs, but with getting out of jail. And finally, a few days later, my wife and her father came to get me. And the intervention happened on the way home. It wasn't a whole lot of folk. It was just like, look, you feeding my daughter, bruh. What you gonna do? This is daddy. This is her daddy. You know what I'm saying? And she was tearfully fumbling through her insurance policy, and they found a detox, and I went to the detox. And I went to the detox, and that's where the aftercare and all that came from. That's how I ran into town. And the guy that was running the detox was one of us. And he went right to work on me. He did not wait. He did not sugarcoat it. He went right to work on me. I did not know he was going right to work on me, okay? But he had me tell my story within the first 3 days I was in detox, you know? And all he did was get me to understand that if they let me out of there on my own, I was going to go mess up. And then we found out I didn't have the 7 days worth of insurance. By the grace of God, they put me in a halfway house, and I started going to meetings. It was funny that my first couple of days in the halfway house, I saw these two placards, right? I saw these two placards, and it was in front of the TV, you know, the wheel-in television. The wheel-in television had most of the steps obscured except the first one. And I just looked up there, and I saw the first one, and it made so much sense. It just intuitively makes sense. You know, I don't know why it made sense to me, because I'd never seen anything like this before in my life, right? I had no clue what y'all did in here. You know, I thought NABBA was some kind of cult club. We used to stay right across the street from it. I used to cuss at the people for turning left in front of me to go in NABBA, right? Because I was ignorant. And, so when I seen this thing, I was like, man, that's all you have to do? You know, I really did. I thought it made a whole, I didn't see the rest of them, right? So they put me in a halfway house. I started going to NAB. I'm like, and paradox is starting to come. Now, the same place I'm cussing at folk about letting me in and out. Now, I'm trying to get in and out of there, right? Those guys were really, 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 really cool guys. They understood me. They understood me. They understood me better than I understood me. You know, and then one day I seen these two guys fussing over me. And that made me feel like Gomer Pyle, kind of. They were fussing over me. And they were fussing over who was going to take me through the steps. I did not know for years that's what they were fussing about. That was my sponsor and his sponsor fussing about, well, who was going to take me through the steps, because I was just that sick. They just wanted to get as many blessings out of me as they could, right? And my sponsor ended up winning, and he took me through the steps. And steps changed my life. And in case in point, when we got to the fourth step, and I got to those two resentments, they were actually three because I had a resentment at my stepfather because he was taking my dad's place and my daddy wasn't dead. I was tripping on that. It was just confusing. It was just real confusing. And I got to resolve the resentment with my mother because she was just doing the best she could do. She, you know, whatever that was none of my business. I'm a baby. I did not understand. And the resentment I got was just based on my limited understanding of what was going on. I thought they did me wrong. Same thing with my dad. You know, he's just doing the best he could do as a father. They don't write books on how to do this, you know. And and my sponsor helped me understand that, you know, in a loving way. And the other thing that helped me was this balm of love that you have in these kinds of rooms, this balm of love that seemed to just kind of make all the pain easier to deal with. Because in a room like this, it's so much love, you don't have to worry about nothing. Unless you're just obsessed with worrying, you know. But if you get a grip on HP and what's going on in these rooms, you really can heal from practically anything, you know. And that's what happened, you know. I had these resentments, the things I call resentments, the things I thought people did to me. I just had a theory about what they did to me. And then when we get down to the eighth and ninth step, I'm certain what I did to y'all because I did it. And like I stole my best man's money during the week of my wedding and bought his table dances and bought his liquor with his own money. I did, you know. And by the time I got to do his amend for that, he really needed the money back right then. I mean, it just worked out. I'm not claiming credit for that. I'm just going, HP know what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? He got me a good wedding, and he got my man paid back for it. Providence is something else. Providence. The hand of God going before me, preparing the way. Providence. You know, that's what actually happened to me. I had this bad to use and drink disease. It took me out. And when the smoke cleared, God had prepared this for me. It's no other kind of way I could have thought my way through this without y'all. It's no other kind of way I could have survived this thing alone. This hideous disease. You know, it's no way I could have did it. You know, I got clean. I had this resentment at myself. I didn't tell y'all this story. I was partying real hard, and I got to the end of college, and it was time to take the LSAT to get in law school, right? Well, I partied so hard the night before until I woke up with not enough time to make it to the test. I slid in under the wire, got my test and the number 2 pencil, got my seat, went to sleep, slobbered all over the test. Just bad luck, man. By like selling a stolen van to the police, man. You know, snake bit, you know. And when everybody test came back, I was victimized. I don't know what they did in my test. We need to show. I know what I did. So that was the amend I had to make to me. And my old slick sponsor had me taking the test again. Then when I took the test and got a decent grade on me, he had me applying to law schools. And by now I'm married, got a job, a career. I can't go full time. So they gave me a part-time law school to go to. I went to the part-time law school every day, paid my own way, got out of the law school, took the bar exam, and passed it by a point. A point. This snake bit, bad to use, bad to drink, junky drunk, that everything comes up a point short on, now I'm a point to the good. And I say that's God's point. Okay? And he snuck me into doing that. I didn't tell you about the third step. The third step, you know, I'm a lawyer now, so it's a deal. If you save me from myself, I'll tell everybody you did it. That's what the third step is. If you read it real slow, that's what it said. God, please save me from me. And if you do it, I'll reward you. I'll tell everybody you did it. I won't take credit for it. I think it's a pretty good deal. Why do you think I'm standing here? Because he saved me from me. Now, it was kind of hard to do, right? Because I had to go through all them procedures. But they ain't bad procedures, man. When you think about what you get in return. When you know, I had no clue of what I was going to get, man. Okay, automatically, I done went from academic failure to sliding in, you know, I slid in under the wire to fail, I slid in under the wire to get back in. Then, I helped a guy get elected, county CEO. He turned around and dubbed me a county judge. Now I'm Roy Bean, one of the Roy Beans in the Cab County. How do you get that, Jim? You know, and I'm you know, they put me behind a podium with a robe. So I had this guy, he came before me one day for laundering for drugs, right? And I ain't got no sense, y'all. So I said, sir, you know, you laundered for drugs. I just need for you to contemplate something for me. I need for you to be able to answer one question for me. And he said, what is it, sir? I need for you to be able to tell me whether you're a drug dealer or a drug addict. Go sit over there and think about it, and I'll get to you at the end of the calendar. Like, I'm really, what's going to happen really hinges on his answer. Now, I don't care. But to watch him try to figure out which one of the answers is right. Pretty good deal. Pretty good deal. He don't know what to say. And I'm part-time, so, I'll tell him to go get 60 meetings and see me in two. I might not never come back. I might not be back for a year. So whenever they call me, you know. But all of that was good. And then I hung out a little longer, and y'all remember when they swore John Roberts in to be the Supreme Court Justice? Well, they swore me in that same day. He turned around and swore me into the United States Supreme Court that same day, that same morning. So I, you know, it's about 10% of all the lawyers in existence that get to fuss at the Supreme Court. And I'm one of them. Now, that might not seem like a big deal because everybody don't understand the significance of that, but all my legal colleagues, they get green, turquoise, and all kind of colors. That I got that kind of privilege, you know what I'm saying? And I can just walk in anytime I get ready. Sit in there, sit right up behind whoever's fussing. Just don't have the playing field enough to really play it out, you know what I'm saying? So, now, all of this is taking place from 1986 up through about now. You know, my sponsor died 2 weeks ago, and I was in the DA's office. And when I got here, I didn't have none of them skills. I didn't even know if I was going to make it to the next paycheck. I couldn't even earn a paycheck and do what was right with it. You know, Tom and I went to aftercare, and then me and my wife started going to couples aftercare. And, they wanted us to do a quality, spend some quality time together, right? So I was getting to the 11th step where they say talk through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact. So I just thought, baby, why don't we go to church? I can kill two birds with one stone. So about at the beginning of my recovery, me and my wife started going to this church. We started going to the church. The preacher kept noticing me and her coming to the church. He made her a mother and put me on the trustee board. I figured they done did the background check and know I wasn't going to be a decent deacon, right? So So we did that for 20 years. The church split. We went to the new pastor. And now I'm back teaching Sunday school. She's a mother. I sing in the choir. And I'm going to tell y'all something. I can't remember none of them songs until I get up there. Don't ask me to do no solos about none of these Negroid spirituals or nothing, because I don't remember them until I'm up there for some strange reason, right? But we were doing all that. And then one day a deacon walked up to me, the chairman of the deacon board walked up to me, and he said, "We've been watching you, Jewel." I was like, "Oh, my God, did I see me going into one of them?" I don't know what they saw, right? But they invited me to become a deacon. Since August, I've been acting like a deacon, giving out communion and calling people. And it's another kind of world, man. It's another kind of... See, the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is the spiritual nature of it. The way they let you get a God. You know what I'm saying? I had one, right? And I got a... And so all the steps they do is just, you know, improve the conscious contact. So I just went back to the class I skipped. You know, it's not about what kind of denomination it is. Just for me, I just went back where I left from. You know, it's all good, you know. You know, and then I watched myself evolve from looking for reasons not to go to church to looking for reasons to go. And I don't go looking to be forgiven for nothing. I go to celebrate what was given to me all week long. My sanity, my health, good friends, the ability to perceive love. You know, I didn't have all of that when I got here. You know, I was too covered up and too intoxicated to feel any of the real gifts that God put out. You know, the program got God all through it. He got God all through it. And one of the most potent weapons against this disease is Him. You know, this guy, I don't know if this is a good story to tell in this country, but I'm going to try. This guy said 6 and 7 is like a big obnoxious giraffe saunters over to you and craps in your lap. And one of your buddies say to you, "Well, what are you going to do about that, man?" Maybe a sponsor or somebody, right? And you go, let me think about it. And while you're thinking about it, God looks over your shoulder and says, "Hey, man, why don't you let me have that? I can do wonderful things with it. I can make grass grow. I can fertilize fields with it. I can do all kind of wonderful things with it." And I go, "No, this is my crap. Why would I do that?" I don't know. How much time I got, man? How much? Okay, good. I can tell y'all this joke. If y'all wasn't at the Alatoona Roundup, I told this joke at the Alatoona Roundup. So all y'all who was at the Alatoona Roundup, don't tell my punchline. These three guys died and went to heaven, Jim. And turns out that heaven wasn't all it was cracked up to be, right? And St. Pete met him at the door. And congratulated him for a life well lived, and told him they had to run to the place for an eternity. He just had one thing he needed for him not to do. He wanted him not to step on any of the ducks, right? But he used to be a guy that made it to heaven, got in here. All he wanted me to do is miss a duck or two. I can do that. Okay. And they went on about their way for a couple of yawns, and then one day one of them missed and stepped on a duck. While he was waiting to see what was going to happen, this great big old door opened, and this god-awful ugly woman came out, and they handcuffed her to the guy that had stepped on the duck. Stuck with her for eternity. So now they're a little worried, not too worried, but a little worried, because it wasn't them. You know, he got the lady, and they still trotting around heaven. And then one day, another one stepped on another duck. Wham. And this time the door opened and an even uglier woman came out. And they handcuffed him to the guy and they stuck with him for eternity. Now this third guy, He is having trouble enjoying heaven. He be waiting for the ducks to go by. He be crossing the street when he see him coming. He be waiting for him to leave before he go anywhere. And he managed not to step on a duck. Then when the gate opened anyway. And this beautiful woman came out. And they handcuffed her to him. He's dumbfounded. He said, "What did I do?" She said, "I stepped on a duck." So my wife and I heard the joke, right? She heard it. You know, she was kind of confused. She kind of Alanis, right? She didn't know what to do. She didn't know whether to laugh or get mad, right? So, you know, one Saturday I was about to leave the house, and she noticed I was putting on a shirt that I had worn earlier in the week. You know how y'all get about that, right? I'm like, these people ain't going to see me where I'm going. She's fussed and cussed and did all that stuff. And I said, "Now remember, baby, you stepped on a duck. You stuck with me." So, once again, guys, 30 years is a long time to get anything right. Congratulations. Y'all got it right. There are a lot of people, and Jim will be one of the first to tell you, that have benefited because this group has been is here. And there are a lot more people going to benefit because you are here. Don't give up on us. My name's Jewel. I'm an alcoholic. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.